Okay, so when we talk about network, it's not a one size that fits all. So depending upon how big is the organization in terms of the different users, the different applications, then the network has to be designed. So again, it's not a one size that fits all. So consider that it's a small office, right? So if there are, say, less than 10 users, so what would you typically need is, say, if there are cables which come to each desk, then each of these 10 different cables need to get connected onto a switch, right? That switch gets need to connected onto a router and a firewall, and then you are up and running, right? So again, so for a small, typically a small company or a small environment, one switch and one router and one firewall should do the trick. In fact, nowadays what organizations are doing is that they don't want to invest heavily into the cabling and stuff, because it takes a lot of time and effort, right? So say, and this is very common in banks nowadays. So the way that the banks come with their branches, typically you would see the small banks or the small branches in say the tier 2 or the tier 3 cities, where you would not have more than say 10 people or 15 people or 20 people sitting out of a branch. So for that, what would you need? Hardly one switch and one router and one firewall. But then it takes a lot of time for the cabling to be designed, right? So there has to be concealed cabling, which, you know, people cannot see and stuff like that. So nowadays what people are doing is they just have one or two wireless access points, that is a Wi-Fi, and the people can connect to the Wi-Fi network, so that it takes very less time to get deployed. So it's faster. Plus you don't have to invest heavily into the cabling and stuff. So business can be up and running very quickly. So things are changing now. The second is a medium enterprise. So say it could be, say, a few hundreds of users. So what typically you would need is, say, a collapsed core architecture. So the two-tier network design that we spoke about, users getting connected onto the access switches. Access switches, because there are say some 100, 200, 500 users, those could get connected onto the core switches or the collapsed core switches, and then you would have the firewalls in place, and then you could communicate. So the point I'm making is that depending upon the number of users, the network has to get designed. But then yes, the firewall or the security has to be in place. Say if it's a big enterprise, then a firewall has to be sized accordingly. The functions have to be built accordingly. Vis-a-vis a small office where you have just 10 users, probably you would just need to block, say, a couple of sites. Vis-a-vis a large enterprise which have got some group policies, user-based access controls and stuff. So you would need tighter controls, tighter firewall policies in place. The third could be a large enterprise, say, typically with thousands of users spread across multiple sites, and a common a complex network as such. So you would have a large number of switches in place, many different routers. So because there are geographically located multiple sites, so each site would have, say, two different routers to have high availability in place. Then there could be firewalls. So firewalls any which ways. It's a mandate for every organization, right? Either you would have all the sites sending traffic onto a centralized site, and from there you could have the internet. That is, you could have a centralized internet, or you could have a decentralized internet in which a firewall is needed in all the locations. Then there could be things like DHCP, which is needed for all enterprise. There could be something called as the proxy, or the proxy servers. Basically it's a function of the firewall as such. So what does a proxy do is that a traffic which is meant for the internet, a proxy basically interrupts that in between, and it then inspects whether that traffic is legitimate or not. And the proxy could have rules. So say the URL filtering and all that I spoke about, so these rules can be a part of the web proxy. And then there are different security controls could be in place. So there could be firewalls, as I mentioned. There could be things like IPS, which is intrusion prevention. Then there could be things like DDoS mitigation tools and stuff. So typically, a large enterprise would have a complex architecture in place. And the fourth could be a mega international. So say company like say GE Electrical or say Bank of America, which typically spans across geographies. So they would have some of the most complex IT infrastructures in place. So you would have something called as the load balancers, the network load balancers. So if you have traffic that is coming in from three, four different internet providers, then how do you load balance between them? So that say if 20% comes from here, 30% from second, and so on. So you can actually load balance that traffic. Then there is something called as the global server load balancer. So if the application servers or the servers are located in different parts, then how can based on my geography, I could access the data center that is closer to me. So it's part of the global server load balancer. Then because they span across different geographies, then I could use a lot of WAN optimization tools or WAN optimization devices in place. Now again, because these are different geographies, then a WAN comes into picture. Again, a layer three, right? So then if India wants to send say a PPT file from India to USA, the first time it is sent as it is. The second time, if the user gets is modifying that file, then only that change has to be sent. Only the indexes have to be sent, right? Only the pointers have to be sent. So these are some of the data compression techniques or the WAN optimization techniques which are needed when we talk about complex networks which span across geographies. So these multinational organization, they would have their own dedicated networks with redundancy. They would have different voice network, different data network, video network, right? So these would be complex in its own nature. So just to sum up about the enterprise network, so the key purpose of an enterprise network is to eliminate isolated users and work groups. So basically, you would want to have them as a part of a single work group or one single network. So all systems must be able to communicate and provide and retrieve the information that is intended. Additionally, physical systems and devices should be able to maintain and provide satisfactory performance and security, which is the key. So the enterprise network would include the LAN and the WAN and integrate all the systems, including say the different end user machines and the different operating systems. So some might be operating on Windows, some might be operating on Mac, some might be operating on say Linux. So everything has to be connected, and there could be different devices, say smartphones, tablets, everything getting connected through common communication protocol. So just to sum up, a network is a place where everything gets connected to each other so that information sharing becomes more easy. And this, I just wanted to end our networking conversation with this particular diagram. So this seems a little complex, but then let us understand it. So you have your complex core, the campus core, which is at the top, and then you have the core switches in place. Then you have the aggregation layer. Now, this aggregation layer can also help connect to something called as the servers. And this, the area that the servers get connected is called as the server farm. The aggregation also gets connected to the access layer, as we saw. So a lot of user machine gets connected to that access layer. So in this particular design, what I have tried to capture are the different servers. So you have the blade servers or the blade chassis, as they call it. So the servers can be either one physical device. So it's a single, say it's just like a single laptop. So it could be a single server, or it could be 10 different servers that could be a part of that single server, right? So it's a big enclosure where you could insert different servers in between. So that's a blade chassis. So below what you see is the blade chassis. Again, it's a server which gets connected to the server farm switch. Now, as I said, because the servers are connected, that particular area is called as a server farm. Now, these server farms get connected to the server farm switches. Again, the concept remains the same. Be it servers or users, they have to get connected to a switch. So users get connected to access switches, servers get connected to server farm switches. They get connected to the aggregation layer. Now, what you also see is the database or say the storage area network. Now the storage area network is something called as a SAN storage. It could use something called as fiber channel, and we'll discuss it in the storage technologies. But then it's just a passing reference to it. So the storage area network, again, it could be a part of the switching. So there is SAN switching, which gets connected to the fabric switching. So if you look at the entire campus or the entire IT infrastructure, and this is the most complex one that we've discussed so far. So what we see is the campus core, which would include the routers, the MPLS routers, the internet routers. Then there would be the firewalls, the security layer, which would have the firewall, IPS, IDS, anti-malware, anti-spamware, anti-X features basically. Then you have the switching layers, the aggregation layer, which could basically take input from the different access switches. So the access switches is where the users will get connected to. Then you would have the data center or the server farm switches, where the servers get connected to. Those also get connected to the aggregation layer. So this basically is talks about the entire IT infrastructure from a networking perspective. Okay, so we discuss a new topic now, which is data centers. Having discussed the enterprising networking in detail, what are the things involved, what are the components involved, we understood what are the different types of network equipments. We spoke about routers, we spoke about switch, we briefly spoke about firewall as well. Then we actually saw the different networking architectures. We saw a two-tier architecture, which is also called as a collapsed core architecture, where the core and the aggregation layer is virtually one. We also spoke about the three-tier architecture with access, distribution, and core. So let us now go ahead and look at data centers. Now, a data center is a virtualized repository, whether physical or virtual, for the storage, management, and dissemination of data information, organized around a particular body of knowledge and pertaining to a particular business. Now, what is data center? Simply put, it's the heart of every business. So by the very term data center, one presumes that there are a large number of centralized repository of data that is meaningful information. However, in the computer terminology, data is not just information, but then any other software also. So as I said, data center is heart of every business. So a data center is where all your applications would reside, all your data would reside. And be it any organization, I'm not just talking about an IT organization, right? So even if it's a manufacturing organization, even if it is a pharmaceutical company, so every company will have at least some or the other applications that are running, correct? Now, no longer we live in a world where there are only companies which do all the transactions on paper, correct? But then you require some kind of computer systems. So data center is a place where all your business logic resides, all your web applications, your front-ending client-facing applications would reside, your middleware would reside, your entire storage would reside, your customer database management, your CRMs, your ERP solutions. So everything would reside in a centralized database, and this database resides in a data center. So that's why I am saying that data center is the heart of every business. Data center is a center of IT operations, and hence any discussion on the enterprise solution is incomplete without stressing the importance of the data center and knowing what are the aspects involved in a data center. So a few of the components that a data center would include, as I said, it includes the servers. Now, why servers? Servers are those machines where the applications actually reside, right? So applications, as I said, this could be front-end applications, like say for example any websites. So websites are hosted on the servers. Any kind of other application, say it's a web application, so it resides on a server. So server is I would say the main part of a data center. Then there are computers, again, so computers are just the peripherals, but yes, servers are the main equipment. Then there are networking equipment. Now, you would tell me, Anuj, you already discussed networking equipment in the previous section where we were discussing routers and switches. But then why are we discussing that in the data center piece? But then servers, they need some kind of connectivity, correct? So servers, they are not wireless in its own nature. Servers would still need a connection to a switch, and again the switch would connect to a core switch. So switching also goes all across. In case of a data center, there are different sets of data center switches as compared to a campus environment or a user LAN environment. But the data center also has a lot of data center networking equipment. So such as the switches, then there are the fiber channel switches, and there are different architectures through which the data center networking happens. But then yes, networking again is an important part of the data center. Then there are other security elements such as the firewall, the IPS, the IDS, right? Although we discussed that in the networking piece, but then even in a data center, the security is of utmost importance, right? So just like a user segment, a user will have a lot of say URL filtering policies, anti-malware, anti-spyware kind of policies. But even the data center, because it's the heart of every business, that's where all your transactions reside. So even there, you need to have very stringent security policies in place. Just imagine a situation, if your data center is hosting a website, correct? Now this website is prone to something like a DDoS attack. Now DDoS is distributed denial of service attack. That means, if it's a legitimate website, and if that particular website is able to handle say 10,000 users at a time, now in a DDoS kind of attack, that is a distributed denial of service attack, what would happen is a hacker would send a request to the servers from different geographical locations. So it could be different countries, it could be different cities, right? So what happens is, say if I am an e-commerce player, say Flipkart.com, I have my e-commerce website, and if this website, if it is capable to handle 10,000 users and there is a DDoS attack across the globe, so that means the hackers would then send the request packets to this server, and once the limit of 10,000 reaches, that means the server will no longer be able to send or service these requests. So what will happen is that a legitimate user who would want to say look at a particular product to buy it, even he will not gain access to that website. So this is the power of a DDoS attack. So this DDoS attack will happen at the data center. It will not happen at a campus environment. So that is the reason why you need all the most stringent policies in a data center. So in a user environment, it's important to have a very stringent security framework in place. But then it's okay, because at the end of the day, it's user data. But then, so by no way that I'm saying that user data should be compromised. No, even user data is really important. But then in a data center, it's absolutely a no-brainer that you need to have the best of the breed security technologies. So that's where I've listed that security again is an important component of the data center architecture. Then we come down to the storage technologies. I mentioned that web servers, then there are application servers, and then there are database servers. So database will actually host the transaction information. It will host your customer database. It will host your CRM. So all the database is stored in a storage, and this storage is often referred to as a SAN. SAN is a storage area network, and I'll take you through the different storage terminologies which are involved. But then, so just understand one thing. So there is a storage area as well, and this is the actual logical storage. This is not the physical storage where you store the physical file. It's the place where your logical files are stored. And then there is a data center management software. So this would actually manage the entire orchestration through which information flows. Is it in the east to west direction, north to south direction? What is the exact compute, or what is the CPU utilization of the servers? What is the RAM? What is the hypervisor? What is the virtualization? So everything gets managed by a data center management software. So these are some of the components involved in a data center. Now, these are the compute resources. Now, there could also be non-computing resources in the data center. So, this include the power and the cooling, so such as the air conditioners, the generators. So, why are these needed is that, so you have servers, right? Now, servers are physical servers, so these are physical devices. Now, these devices have to be installed in something called as the network racks, right? Now, these racks and these servers, because they have a very high compute power, they need to be cooled down, right? So you cannot have a device which gets heated up very quickly, or else it will just malfunction. So you need to have a proper cooling system in place, so as to have all the devices that are cooled down. And then there are different technologies that, you know, there is front to back cooling, back to front cooling, and so on. So probably if you are interested, you should do a deep dive into the different cooling techniques. So these are precision air conditioning that is used in a data center. Then there are physical racks, as I mentioned. So racks are the places where the servers or the networking equipments are hosted. Then to connect the different servers, you require cables. So these could be the fiber cables, or it could be copper cables through which the servers are connected, either to the switches, or the switches are getting connected to the storage appliances. Then there is the internet backbone. So it could be the internet, or it could be any other connectivity, private connectivity in the form of the NPLC, that is a lease line, or MPLS connectivity, right? So any kind of connectivity is needed. Because understand one thing, so data center is good to store that information, but then how do you give that information back to the user, or how does the user give the information to the data center, right? So if the user and the data center reside in the same place or in the same LAN, then it is okay. But then most often than not, what really happens is that data centers are not located in the same place where users are located. So that is the reason why you need some kind of connectivity to the data center, and this happens either through MPLS or a private connectivity which is NPLC, or it could be an internet. And the last component is the security component. Now this is not the logical security that I spoke about in the previous slide, which was the firewall, the IPS, the DDoS mitigation, the web application firewall, and so on. This is the actual physical security. So what I mean is, because data center is a critical location, there cannot be anyone who can just simply walk in, right? So there could be things like boom barriers to prevent cars from getting in. There could be retina scans. There could be biometric scans. So there could be something like a single man entry. So a lot of physical security. It could be CCTVs, right? A lot of physical security devices are also in place when we talk about a data center architecture. So this particular slide, you see a data center in the real life. So here what you see are the black ones are the chassis, the cages as we call them, and the yellow ones are the cables, and on top of that what you see are the cable trays. So the cable trays actually take the cables from the different racks, and then they are connected to each other. So typically large corporations have multiple data centers. So again, depending upon the nature of the business, depending upon what is the size of the applications, what is the magnitude of the different applications, there could be multiple data centers. So a company could have a primary data center, a disaster recovery center, and a near disaster recovery, a NDR. Right, so in the banking industry, it is very common to have a DC, DR, and a NDR, that is a nearline DR. And so, as I said, so some of the Fortune 500 companies in the US and even have remote underground DR centers with hot replication. Now, what do you mean by hot replication is that a DC would have the primary copy of the transaction, and a same copy once it is written in the DC is replicated to DR, and that is called as hot replication. So even if the DC goes down, then the DR is powered up to serve all the transactions. So that is the hot replication, so that even in case of a DC failover, the transaction is not lost. So this brings us to another interesting topic. What is a disaster recovery center? So I spoke about the DC, which hosts all your business critical applications. Now what is a DR or a disaster recovery center? So a disaster recovery center is something which hosts the same infrastructure as that of the DC. But then depending upon the company strategy, it could be say replicating like what 20% of the DC or 80% or 100%. So again, that depends upon the company's initiative. But a DR is a place which is used to store the information from the DC. So while designing a data center, we choose reliable equipment, components and technology, but eventually every system is prone to failure. So hence resiliency is an important aspect when we consider a data center design. So disaster recovery is the response and remediation when a company follows over a planned or an unplanned failure. Businesses often have a secondary data center used for backup. So yes, DR can be used as a backup. So if the primary data center fails, you can use DR to as a backup so that your critical data is not lost. This facility can take the responsibility in case if a primary data center fails, but the recovery time will depend upon the business requirements, like the cost distance between the two data centers, application criticality and the scope for recovery. So when you are designing a data center, these things are really important. So are you creating a DR which is a 100% replication of the DC, or you have some of the components which is a warm DR, or it is just a facility where you have some equipment but which is not actually powered on, which is a cold DR. So there are different data center technologies and different data center strategies which are used. So you have the warm DR, you have the pilot light, you have the standby, and you have the hot replication. So let us look at an important terminology when we talk about data failure. So the amount of data loss that a company can tolerate is known as the recovery point objective. So there are two key aspects when you talk about DR, right? So there is RTO and RPO. So what is RTO stand for? RTO stand for recovery time objective, and RTO stand for recovery point objective. Now what is RTO? So RTO, suppose if there was data center failure at say 12 o'clock, right? And the time it takes for the DR to trigger in so that the business is not impacted is the RTO, that is the recovery time objective. So say for example there was an outage at 12 o'clock and all my systems are ready and up and running by 2 o'clock. So my RTO in this case is 2 hours. So what it means is within 2 hours, all my systems are ready to start functioning the way they were. So that is recovery time objective. Now what is recovery point objective? So recovery point objective is what is the period till which that data outage is permissible. So just the same example, right? So if there is a data outage at 12 o'clock, say for example the data center fails at 12 o'clock, and if I have a recovery point objective of 2 hours, that means whatever transactions that happened between 12 to 2, I may or may not be able to recover, but then I'm able to recover the transactions after 2 o'clock. So that is the recovery point objective. So recovery time can be between 2 hours to days or even weeks based on the company's applications. Disaster avoidance.